very useful to be able to speak Swedish so we can figure out the computer. It might seem a bit odd that I'd be standing with Dave because I'm not a scholar publisher myself. I'm with CoAction Publishing. We're a very small publishing house presently. We plan to be bigger, based here in Scandinavia. But we do a lot of work with scholar publishers and with some of the university presses in this area. And Dave and I, in fact, have done a few workshops together now for scholar publishers. So we wanted to give a bit of an introduction this afternoon to the group discussion that will take place tomorrow during the breakout session for scholar publishers. And rather than go into a lot of detail about tips and tools as we initially had planned, we'd really like to take a look at a sort of broader introduction to this group of publishers and link that a little bit to OWASPA, in fact. And Dave, I should mention as well, you can also give your bio, I guess, Dave.
Oh, okay. I'm David Solomon. I work at Michigan State University, but I've run a scholar publisher, OA journal, for 13 and a half years now called Medical Education Online, and got very interested in open access, and I have talked a lot about it and written about it, and as Caroline said, we've done a lot or try to do more in terms of educating scholar publishers about publishing open access journals.
So what we just want to briefly go over is who are the scholar publishers, which Paul helped us out a bit there, and what opportunities there exist today for this group of publishers, because though scholar publishers have always existed, they're becoming much more visible today, and I think probably growing much more quickly than they were earlier. Also, what challenges this group faces, because the challenges for this group are slightly different, perhaps, than professional publishing houses. And we also want to touch upon why OWASPA feels it's very important that we actually have this group of publishers with us. And on the opposite side, what we think OWASPA can do to also help support this group of publishers.
And this is actually the definition of scholar publishers that we use with the organization. Individuals or small groups of scientists or scholars that publish usually a single scholarly journal in their field of study. And the publication process is often subsidized by volunteer labor. Who is this group? Oftentimes they're small societies or special interest groups within societies, university departments, sometimes just small groups of scholars that have a particular interest in an area, and sometimes there are actually individuals on their own who publish journals. I think what separates them, and what actually is contained in this definition, it's publishing a journal without the help of a professional, being a professional publisher that actually makes their living publishing journals. So it's basically scientists and scholars who start their own journals. And scholar publishers were really the pioneers of open access publishing. There were people publishing journals on their own going back at least into the mid-80s. Some of you may have heard of BitNet. There were actually journals on BitNet that were run as individual listservs. Of course, they were only text only, and they probably weren't a realistic replacement for our existing journal systems. But they were out as early as that, and of course started growing as soon as the World Wide Web was developed and really preceded the professional publishing of open access journals and continue to be kind of a innovative source of publishing journals in areas that may not have been picked up yet by professional publishers, and trying out new and novel things that in terms of open access publishing. Peter Suver mentioned, the largest number of journals out there today, based on number of study, are journals that don't charge or article processing fees. Now, that doesn't mean they're necessarily published by scholar publishers, but I would suspect that the vast majority of journals that don't collect article processing fees are published by people who are not professional publishers.
Well, if we take a look at the opportunities that exist for this group today, There have always been scholar publishers out there, as Dave just mentioned, since 1985. But even with subscription and paper-based journals, you had scholar publishers. But clearly, it's become easier to be a scholar publisher today than it was earlier if you choose not to have the print edition. Not so much because, yes, you do save some money, obviously, with print and distribution, but perhaps most of all because you save efforts on having to sell that subscription and to be out there marketing to libraries. And certainly in the last maybe 5-6 years, when publishing houses became buying up each other, and it became more and more difficult to actually be very small in this market. But it looks today that, in fact, there's so many tools and support that are emerging for this group of publishers that we're probably going to see more and more. Among others, we can't not mention Open Journal System, OJS. Over 2,000 journals today are using OJS, and there's a number of other systems as well out there for scholar publishers. So that in itself, I think, helped quite a bit to just give the physical mechanism to begin getting the information out there. Knowledge Exchange, who also work with OWASPA, who actually offer hosting for journals, is another little piece of the puzzle that can be helpful. And obviously, quite a number of university libraries are today offering hosting and some support. Perhaps not an entire publishing service from start to finish, some do, but maybe smaller pieces of support to help scholar publishers. And there are a number of guides that come out as well. PLOS was one of the first, I think, with a white paper on open access publishing. And Dave actually has written a book on, what is that called? Your book. Thank you. I can never remember the name of it. But that's also because I'm working on a guide of my own. Dave and I always have the same ideas, and we got money to write a guide together with Loon University Library the day after Dave's book was announced. Okay. So we have one coming out in January that'll be online. And then also, this is, I guess, a little bit of an advertising, I apologize, but CoAction Publishing has worked together with some of our other suppliers to launch a website called Open Access Solutions. And our idea there was, we really saw that this is a growing market sector, and probably today, before, you sort of had to do everything yourself, or you had to turn the whole project over to a publisher, whereas today, you can probably choose to do some yourself, but you might want to just hand over pieces of the puzzle. And that was the idea, to give a bit of a menu almost that you could order off of with what kind of support you wanted. And perhaps, certainly not least of important, is that there's such a growing community today of scholar publishers that you can share information, ideas, and maybe even work collectively for various things on. And that's one of the ideas with OWASPA, and that some of the scholar publishers had begun talking together to create an organization, because they saw that they might be able to work together to have some collective solutions.
Some of the challenges that face scholar publishers, probably, in my mind, the biggest challenge facing them is the lack of expertise and the lack of resource in publishing professional quality journals. As a scholar publisher, when I started my journal 13 years ago or so, I knew nothing about publishing and made all sorts of mistakes, that some of which I'm still living with today, 13 years later. And most people who, most scholars who publish journals, you know, we're not experts in the field. As all, most of you are publishers, and you know there's really a body of expertise that crosses all sorts of fields. And for these journals to be high quality journals, they need education, certainly. And certainly it takes resources to publish, too. And this is a real problem. I think, and I don't have any statistics on this, but if you look, there's an awful lot of scholar publishers' journals that either just never get off the ground, or get off the ground, publish it for a little while, and then die. And this is a huge problem. It's bad for OA as a field, because it just gives all of OA a bad reputation. And additionally, it's very unfair to the authors that do publish in these journals, because their material disappears, and so much, as you know, of the credit that scholars get for publishing in journals is related to the prestige of a journal, and if it just disappears, it's lost. And thirdly, it's just bad for our knowledge base in general, because when these journals disappear, oftentimes the content eventually disappears too, and we lose that little bit of the archive of knowledge out there. So this is, I see, as a terrible problem and that we need to address in, for scholar publishers. Also, and I, when I say this, I want to differentiate between the quality of the scholarship or research in these journals and the publication process. But scholar publishers' journals tend not to be, in not all cases, but in many cases, not as really professionally published. And for example, having effective business plans and marketing and dissemination strategies so the material really gets out there and these journals stay around. Policies such as licensing, as Peter talked about, conflict of interest, the appropriate use of animals and human subjects. Many of these journals do not have policies for that, and again, that's a problem. Things like archiving and indexing to ensure the content is not only around next year, but 10 or 20 or 50 years from now, and consistent high quality and appropriate formats. And so certainly raising up the qualities to these journals is all our responsibility and in our best interest.
So, why do we combine these two groups? I think OWASPA is perhaps unique in that we have both scholar publishers, and we also have very large professional publishing organizations like SAGE, and we have both hybrid publishers. We have university presses. We have for-profit, not-profit. And when we first began discussions about if we should establish an organization, we actually were first talking. There was a group of professional publishers talking, and there was a group of scholar publishers talking unbeknownst to one another, but then we discovered one another. And there was a discussion about, well, should we have one organization, or is it more appropriate to have two? And I think that Peter Suber's presentation this morning really gave why we needed to be one organization, because I think absolutely all of us look at that list and we all agree and we all experience that and we all see those as the challenges. And clearly, all of us then, as we got to talking, knew that we really shared an interest in the reputability of open access publishing broadly. And to protect that, we need to work together, regardless of what type of open access publisher we are. We also all saw and recognized the need to really define that added value that we bring to the process, that this is something distinct from archiving, that we are doing something different with what we're producing. And we need to work together to define that and to further develop that as well. And the other thing that's quite unique, I think, as one of the professional publishers in this organization and working with scholar publishers is, I mean, I have one set of glasses. I'm a professional publisher. My academic career was many years ago. Scholar publishers have two sets of glasses. They're both the scholarly community at the same time that they are publishers. And although maybe I keep good ties with the community of scholars out there, it's quite different to be one yourself and to see it from both sides. And I think that brings a really good perspective into the organization for us. And then finally, as Dave said, this is a group of publishers that, in fact, was already starting and experimenting back in the 1980s. And certainly in the 1990s, many were already online before a lot of professional publishing houses had their materials online. And one of our goals in OWASPA is to promote innovation and contribute to the development and dissemination of innovative approaches to scientific communications. And if we really want to do that, then we truly need to capture all of the innovation that's going on, and not just that that might be in professional organizations, but also amongst the scholar publishers, because there are some interesting things going on there. And I think, too, it reminds us that during the discussions today that often get stuck in, well, is it cheaper with open access, or is it, you know, cheaper to just stick with what we have, that open access isn't just about the serials crisis, but really it's about taking advantage of technology, and that there were people trying to do that early, and that's what all of us are really trying to do today, is take advantage of the technology and to move scientific communications along. So my point being that scholar publishers are very welcome.
Thank you. Okay. So what can OWASPA provide to scholar publishers? Well, first, I think education. We can be a conduit for education, as Peter mentioned, Super mentioned again, forming a mentorship and partners would be the kinds of things that could be done. Hopefully that we can be a conduit for other types of educational material that's going out there. Secondly, I think we could facilitate access to tools and support services. CrossRef is a perfect example of one of the ones that I think would be tremendously helpful to scholar publishers. It's, I think, $275 a year to be a member of CrossRef. That doesn't sound like a huge amount of money, but for a scholar publisher that's operating totally on volunteer effort, you know, that's one issue that they might not do, but if it was available, they might take advantage. And secondly, there's probably an awful lot of scholar publishers that don't even understand what DOIs are. And so again, I think this is a good example of how the organization can help bring up and support scholar publishers. Thirdly, is articulating standards and providing certification or seal of approval. And I don't mean this in a punitive sense, but really in a synergistic sense with education, not only but to give a set of standards that these journals can work up to and then get a seal of approval that will help them in terms of gaining their reputation and so on, and then provide the education and the tools and so on to help them reach that standard. So I think these things are all synergistic. And then, again, as a networking opportunities, because not only can the professional publishers learn from scholar publishers, but the other way, we can learn an awful lot from the professional publishers.
So just in conclusion, Dave and I, together with John Wilinski, will be facilitating the session tomorrow for scholar publishers. So these are some of the things we might talk about tomorrow. What are the challenges that each of you are experiencing? How can one work together to try and address those challenges? How could WASPA perhaps help you? But also, we're there if there's tips or suggestions that we see on the spot that we can share, that we can do that as well. And thank you again for coming. I think it's really unique to have such a group of publishers in one room, so I feel really excited about this. Thanks.
Do we have any questions?
I suspect that you're going to say that this is a subject of some debate, but I wonder about just the use of the of contrasting scholar publishers with the, and here's the phrase that slightly bothers me, professional publisher. Because, of course, you have professional in the sense of full-time and also professional in the sense of skill. I wonder whether there is better terminology that you could use. So, you know, clearly you want to be professional in terms of skills in publishing, even though you are a part-time publisher.
Yeah. Right, yeah. What we meant by that is people who earn their living by publishing. But you're right, it may be, it's got two meanings there.
In fact, as we were forming too, we were trying to define these things, and we're very careful, because I thank you for saying that, because I would like to define that. Absolutely, I don't mean to imply that you can't be a scholar publisher and produce something that's very professional. So we did think about it more as that this is our 9-to-5 job, and we've defined that on the WASP website. But if you have a better suggestion, I'm very open to it, because I don't want to use any derogatory language.
Yeah, I mean, an important point to make is, I mentioned earlier today that there are 5 open access journals that I'm aware of that are number one in their fields in the ISI ranking, one of which is published by a scholar publisher, Gunther Eisenbach, the Journal of Medical Internet Research.
He just won some awards for that, in fact.
Yeah, so I mean, it's quite clear that this set of journals should in no way be seen as second-class journals. Many of them are really top-quality journals, but they're just not published by professional publishing organizations.
And one thing I say, that the separation between the publishing and the content, many of these journals have excellent content, easily on par with journals published by I don't know how you want to turn it. Not par.
The other guys.
The other guys. The guys who do it full time. The time and so on.
Any other questions?
I have a question about the prospects for growth of the UMLA-SPA. Can you say anything about what you estimate the future membership will be? And have you encountered open access publishers who are reluctant to join, perhaps because of your bylaws or your code of conduct?
And the second point, yes, we've had a couple that have pulled out when they, mainly because they're licensing, they didn't want to take on, we have some guidelines in terms they don't have to have the full CC BY license, but they have to allow more wider use of their content. We had a few pull out because of that, and they weren't willing to take on the license.
But at the same what we thought was very positive was, in fact, some that did apply, and when we pointed out, but we have this, what is that? Well, and actually, you can easily work with that by adopting the CCL. Oh, so we've already begun to see that we actually can provide some service by actually just educating on that. And we've had a couple that said, oh, well, that's not difficult. Or others that have been trying to figure out, should I go with that or not? Mm-hmm. So while, yes, there have been a couple that have been reluctant, others have been actually helped and assisted by that. And perhaps their lives have made a little bit easier with that assistance.
There were some that had no idea. I mean, they didn't have licenses because they had no knowledge of that. That's important. And just by talking to them, they learned that and then took on the CC licenses.
Yeah, and I think in terms of growth, we really haven't tried to project that yet. Obviously, we would like to grow very large, and we'd like as many as possible to join us, because by creating that code of conduct, as you pointed out, Peter, we really wanted to try and set some kind of standard so that if you're an academic and you're publishing and you want to know, who is this publisher? Can I really trust them? If they were on our list, you would see that, yes, they've gone through these criteria and that OWASPA has approved them as a member. So I know that they meet some kind of standard that I should expect. So what's difficult right now is we'd like to get more, some of the hybrid publishers on board as well. But we haven't been able to do that so well yet.
I'm curious, as OWASPA grows, if there's any idea to move slightly beyond just a support organization for those people in the field, and also to include standards promulgation beyond open access in terms of copyright, in terms of, say, open data or other mutually beneficial open initiatives as the organization grows and influence hopefully also grows.
Mm.
We have been talking about opening it up to book publishers. We haven't really talked about open data yet.
Because our mission state includes assisting with innovation and setting standards, certainly what we hope is that as things are developing, for example, Creative Commons would look upon us as a partner in dialogue so that we could talk about those things, maybe test things out a bit, as Crossref has sort of been working with us to say we might have new things and this might be a great group to test it out with, so that we can be a bit on the leading edge of that as well to know what we ought to be recommending to our members.
In fairness, I mean, we've just gotten going. I mean, just the process to get the organization off the ground has taken a year and a lot of effort, so we haven't had a chance to even, I think Jeff.
Gosh, I didn't think we were that exciting.
I was wondering, given that you're setting sort of terms and standards for belonging to OWASPA, were you thinking also perhaps providing an auditing function? Because clearly it's one thing to say that you're meeting these standards, and it's another thing to find out whether they're actually doing it.
One of the things that we're trying to incorporate, because when people apply to OWASPA, they do have to fill out quite a bit of information about how many journals do you have that are open access, how many articles per year, and some other information. And we'd like to actually set that up so that people could go in and themselves see the sort of metadata, if you will, about our members. So that, you know, just making it very important that we are putting our money where our mouth is, in a way. So we do have that part. And there's been some discussions about, as Dave mentioned, you know, would there be some kind of, not so much an audit, but some kind of seal that for different groups that they've met certain criteria. We haven't quite come to where we've decided on that yet, but yeah. But we do hope to be able to put at least some of the data about the publishers online so that you can actually see for yourself how are they in practice practicing open access.
And a couple of the board members have been going out when people apply and going out to the website and checking if they really seem to be meeting the criteria that we have. So, I mean, that's about the best we can do.
Yeah, but we've turned people down.
Yeah,
so,
oh, we've turned down, yeah. Or we usually offer them an associate member, which if they're really interested in, so they can at least be part of the organization, that it's just not a voting member. And so.
Do you have any other questions?
Okay.
Well, I'd like to all thank again Dave and Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.